Hi, welcome to Trainwrecks for Jesus. I'm Mark Townsend.
And I'm Maggie Whitehouse. We're both ordained ministers who've left our established churches to become independents.
I'm a little bit pagan,
And I'm a little bit Jewish.
but we are both self-confessed train wrecks, and we're passionate followers of Jesus too.
So follow us as we discuss how falling flat on your face can also be falling upward. Good day, gentle folk. Welcome to Trainwrecks for Jesus. It is, of course, Advent now, and probably being two vicars, even if heretic vicars, we should say something about that, Mark.
Good morning, oh, good day, everybody. And yes, heretic vicars, I like that. I had a little thought yesterday as I sat in my car and I was penning some thoughts about Advent. And then I thought, oh my God, there's so much stuff going on, and I don't know if I can possibly. So I kind of waffled, and this is only a tiny little bit. And I was looking back at what I said last year, which I still kind of really hold on to. It's the usual stuff about being a mess. But so I've sort of well, I'll read this and then we can chat and see what else, because I'm sure there's so much more and so many better things that can be said. So Advent, the season, traditionally the period of the preparation for the coming of the Christ, as well as the preparation for the second coming of the Christ, whatever we mean by that. But what I wanted to ask is, how can we possibly think of coming kingdoms, coming reigns of God, when this world is in such a god-awful mess? And I was listening to something, going off the track now, I was listening to something yesterday, and very wise nun, she was saying one of the questions people have about what they call a realized eschatology, you know, Christ comes and brings the kingdom with him, is when you really look at the state of the world now, but also over the last 2,000 years, has it made any difference at all? You know, you could be forgiven for asking that. And I know, okay, of course it has, because we've got wonderful things through the emphasis of church and spirituality and blah blah blah. But it's also anyway, go back, forget that for now. So how can we talk about the reign of God or the coming of the Christ in when the world's in such a mess? Israel, having just suffered the most loss of life in well, since the Holocaust, and then in retaliation, thousands upon thousands of children and women and men are being killed by bombs in Gaza. Images that make you weep with despair. And then the ongoing saga in Ukraine and Russia and stalemate, still bombing the hell out of each other. And then closer to home, we might not be suffering war, but recessions and bankruptcy and homelessness on the increase, and people losing their houses and mortgage rises, and people not being able to buy food for their children and having to go to food banks. And now they're talking about possible electricity cuts and how we're going to survive, and restlessness and breakdowns of communication, popularism on the increase, division. Richer getting richer, poorer getting poorer, the same old fucking mess. Where in God's name can we see glimpses of the coming of the Christ in all this shit? So I don't have an answer. No one does. We're empty of answers. We're filled instead with questions. But then I thought, maybe that is actually the point, because if Advent is about anything, it is about waiting. And it is also about recognizing that we don't know everything, and that there is a certain amount of emptiness necessary before we can fill the emptiness. Last year I did share a story, which famous story about the Zen master who's pouring a cup of tea, and one of his students is perturbed because he keeps pouring the tea until the cup's full and then keeps pouring it, and the student's getting more and more annoyed and irritated until he says, "What the hell are you doing?" And the teacher says, "Sorry, what are you doing? The cup's full." And the teacher says, "And so are you. And until you empty yourself, there'll be no room for learning anything else." So maybe in order to find some sense of the gold, the magic, the divine light, we ought to empty ourselves, or recognize that we are at the moment certainly empty of answers. We are, I would say, pretty powerless in this very messed up, crucified world. I don't know if you saw, Maggie, the image that was in one of the Bethlehem churches of the Nativity made out of rubble as a symbol of what's happening in Gaza. I thought that was really, really powerful. But that's kind of how, I mean, I don't want to butt anything because it's absolutely shocking and terrible what's going on. And I feel so much for all of them caught up in this on both sides. But that's how I feel, like rubble inside my brain, you know, like how, where are we at the moment? What are we doing to each other? There's so much rubble in our lives. But we perhaps do have, as a Christian religion, we don't have an answer, but we do have the image of a God who is not up there on a throne, but is in the rubble with us. If the cross is about anything, that's what that's about. But also, if the nativity is about anything, it's a God plunged into the rubble and shit and mess and brokenness of our lives in the here and now. So
yes.
Maybe Advent is also about waking up to that.
That's
all I have to say.
The trouble with so many religions is we think that somebody's coming to save us, whereas we are the people that were sent to be the saviors. And that's what it's hard for us to understand, I think. Advent is about, yes, waiting and hope. And the best we can do is hold to hope and keep praying, I think. And it is incredibly difficult. But I think Anne Lamott got it absolutely right when she wrote, don't hope for something specific. Just hold on to the hope, because it's the only thing that keeps you sane. And I'm going to go off on a slight tangent on this. And one of the problems I think the world has got, and I know this is going to be a very unpopular opinion, I think it's chocolate advent calendars. I know that seems very, very trivial, but Brian Bilston, who writes these wonderful poems most days, wrote a poem called The Good Old Days, which said, pity the poor children of today with their calendars stuffed with chocolates, never to know the thrill of opening a small cardboard door and discovering behind it a picture of a bell.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
However, I have an old-fashioned cardboard calendar in front of me, and I do sometimes use the Jackie Lawson advent calendars, which are enchanting, and they have moving cartoons, live animation on them every day, and they are absolutely beautiful, and I often use those. But this year I decided to go back to my cardboard one, and yes, I've had a picture of a goose, a picture of a wreath, a picture of some holly, a picture of an angel, a picture of a candle, a picture of a choir child, I don't know which gender it is, and a picture of Joseph and Mary with Mary very pregnant, which I think was rather enchanting, that one. And but this the point I'm trying to make is that it's about the waiting, and the waiting for the solution. And if you don't wait for the solution, how can the solution come? I've got a beautiful piece of artwork by Michael Medina on my timeline at the moment, which people are sharing and sharing and sharing. I post it every year, and it's a quotation from an anonymous author, Michael never knew who wrote it. But it just sums up how we don't live. And it says, if as Herod, we fill our lives with things and again with things, if we consider ourselves so unimportant that we must fill every moment of our lives with action, when will we have time to make the long, slow journey across the desert as did the Magi, or sit and watch the stars as did the shepherds, or brood over the coming of the child as did Mary? For each one of us, there is a desert to travel, a star to discover, and a being within ourselves to bring to life. What's going on in the world right now is our desert. And in a way, we have to be the prophets and hold the suffering of it and hold the hope, I think. And the culture of the chocolate advent calendar and people making lots of jokes about, you know, they're up to December the 21st already, just show how utterly addicted we are to immediate gratification. And please don't think I'm a complete aesthetic and I'm fasting up to Christmas. No, I'm not. We're having mince pies. But I iced the Christmas cake yesterday, and we're not eating that till Christmas. Do you know what I mean? It's about holding this
absolutely,
balance.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to be sorted now. I have to have my pleasure now. I have to have chocolate every day to build me up to Christmas, which is the great festival of chocolate and food. And I'm just sort of looking at it every single time. And I know part of it is my training, that you're taught to wait, you know, the giving up of something for Lent. I try and give up complaining, which is the hardest thing I ever do every year. And some days I manage it. But it's about this discipline of saying, I will trust and wait. Mm. And the thing is, the world hasn't got it now.
No. No.
And also, the world is not willing to spend that time in contemplation to go in and say, you can beat the shit out of each other till you're blue in the face and your bodies are blue on the ground. It's not going to sort the underlying problem, which is that the ego has to have an opponent. It's only the soul that will hold together in unity, different races, different cultures, different classes, and see all of them are the children of God. The ego can't and won't do that. And you can't, Maggie going off on one of her lectures again. You can't expect the world to be at peace if you are constantly belittling other people, constantly blaming other people, constantly saying it's your fault. You can't. I started that being funny and then ended it up being fairly. I think we can only do the little things that are in front of us. As we say again, that the war in the Holy Land is horrific. And what are we doing in our own lives to create joy and peace? What? Because if we're not, we can't break the war, because we're also at war. And it's that old thing of, you know, what can I do? I'm one person, said 7 billion people.
I'm really glad you brought up the old-fashioned Advent calendars. I'd forgotten that they even existed. They were brilliant. And sometimes the pictures inside had no relevance at all to Advent. It was a spider or something. But they were great, weren't they? And I know I'm saying this now as an adult and not a child. I'm sure children love opening up more chocolates every day.
Of course they do. Why would they not?
But the thing is that for me now, just thinking back, there was a whole lot of anticipation as a little six-year-old boy wondering what was behind that door on the Advent. Whereas there's no anticipation about a chocolate because you know what you're going to get. And it's, in a sense, the kind of the pleasure aspect of it alleviates the mystery, doesn't it? Because even that little cardboard, shitty little advent calendar that Cub Scouts used to sort of make and children in schools make, you know, there is something quite wonderful about the idea of not knowing what you're going to get until you... I think that's...
Yeah, and it also teaches you to live with disappointment.
Live with disappointment, but also that amazingly important theme of reflecting and waiting and not having it all now, because that is, if there's a symptom of the Western disease, it's that, isn't it? Really, it's like even the bloody things that, you know, I've got one beside me, but you're just constantly looking for the next like on your bloody Facebook wall or something. It's all now. And you know, I could be in the middle of a you know, middle of the sea on a ship, and somebody wants me to answer them right now, and then they're and you're trying to explain yourself, sort of, actually I was out of signal. How dare you be out of signal? You know, we want you now. We want you now. Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? It's a real disease.
It is a disease. And, you know, when you have people talk about their chocolate advent calendars and joke about them, if I ever come along and say, I really like the old-fashioned ones, they're going, well, I want my chocolate. I want my chocolate. And I want my chocolate. I absolutely want my chocolate. However, I know that the wanting of the chocolate is addiction. It's a very small addiction in my case. I don't go out buying 16 boxes of chocolates and sit and scoff the lot of them. I'd have probably died by now if I did that. But if I've got chocolate in the house, if I have opened the packet, I will eat it. Yeah. So there is an addictive aspect to it there. And so I understand the idea of opening all the chocolates on the advent calendar. And as a child, I probably would have done that and tried to hide it.
Yeah.
Go on.
Just to be really puritanical here, just thinking about it, advent calendars really are shit, aren't they, in terms of the chocolate ones. When you really think about it, there's a picture of a
Not even
fucking
good chocolate.
Smurf. There's a Smurf on the front. It's bad quality chocolate anyway, but there's a Smurf or some unrelated image, or a, bloody dog with a smile on his face, and some Transformer or something. And it's nothing at all to do. It's just consumer. It's companies. It's companies cottoning on that. I suppose originally there must have been a vaguely Advent-esque calendar with some sort of prize at the end, and it sort of went on from there. But when you really think about it, why don't you just go and buy yourself a pissing Mars bar and fuck the calendar. Sorry, but you only really think about it. It's just, I've never really been one of these Christmas Grinches, because I like the sort of the commercialism of it, and the sort of the Home Alone films and all that. But when you, I can see, what you've done today, Maggie, is you've just shown me a little glimpse into how a very important part of preparing for Advent for children, which was this idea of sort of, daily opening little doors until you get to the final big door, which actually was really magical for me as a kid. And now,
You get the gratification every day.
I remember buying for my kids, I think, three or four advent calendars with chocolates in. And like, what is the point really of this? There is absolutely no enchantment about that at all.
No.
You know exactly what's behind every one of those doors. They've got unrelated pictures of, spacemen or whatever else. I suppose you could vaguely call Jesus a spaceman, but
Yeah,
I
well,
don't
it's the same. It's the same with binge watching, and there are series that I get addicted to as well. But when you sit there and watch five or six episodes a night, you don't have the space in between them to digest what
No.
happened
Yeah.
or talk it over with somebody. In the
Yeah.
old days, I'm not saying the old days were perfect, because they certainly weren't, and I do not want to be in a world where I have to get dressed for school with ice on my bedside water and just my parents' two-bar fire for me to kneel in front, but I do not want to go back to that. But I think there's just this case for
Yeah.
slowing down,
So
absolutely.
many examples of that. Do you know, if we ever get back to that book, we need to do something on that, because
Yes.
even that you were just saying about we're binge watching or whatever. I mean, thankfully, I don't think I, but I do binge watch, because in a sense, the what do you call it, the streamed
Yes.
things you get on Netflix. You can watch one or two a night, whereas you'd you in the old days you'd watch one a week and you'd be waiting for it. But we're in a situation now with me and Sally that I'm so tired. We're watching this one called Lupin, a French thing about a French detective. And sort of Sally stays awake, whereas I fall asleep. So then I have this guilt trip the next day. Oh shit, I've missed half of it. So not only do I binge watch, I then have to go and sit down and force myself to catch up the binge watching before I'm up to date. It's ridiculous. It used
Yes.
to, used to wait, used to be longing for the, it's like really going back to reading. I remember waiting for years for Philip Pullman's third book in his original, his Dark Materials, and that waiting was part of the magic of it.
Yes.
Really,
And
isn't
you would be saying, "Oh, it's thirsty, it's my program."
Yeah,
There
yeah.
was a real specialness about it, and we
Yeah.
are in terrible danger of losing that
Yeah,
specialness.
yeah.
And another silly example, I used to read Susan Hill's books many years ago, and then she did the follow-up to Rebecca, Mrs. De Winter, and I hated it, and it ruined Rebecca for me forever. And it's taken me a really long time to forgive Susan Hill, and somebody recommended detective novels, so I tried it, and it was very well written, but it was the denouement was utterly shocking to me, utterly shocking. And I didn't want to read any more of them. And my husband was also reading the same book. And it was really important to me to wait until he had finished the book so we could talk about it
Yeah,
before I could
yeah.
make a decision whether I could face going on to the next book in the series.
Yeah.
That may sound silly, but my gut reaction was, I'm never reading her again. She's offended me again. I don't like this. She's a horrible author. But when my husband had finished his, he has different loading from me, obviously. And he
Yeah.
said, Well, yes, it was shocking, but what a refreshing thing that you don't have a stylized happy ending, because in the real world, that's probably how things would have happened. It would have turned out. And yes, she did a really stupid thing, this character, but you would have done the same if you'd been in love. And it was so helpful talking it over, because now I'm saying, okay, I will try the next one, because it was a well-written book and very well plotted, and she really made me care about the characters. But it wasn't until I'd waited and discussed it. So that's the same point again, I suppose. Very quickly, before we go on the subject of Advent, I have a wonderful sort of book of hours called A Day Book of Comfort of Joy by Sarah Ban Brennick. And she's written several books like this, and it's a meditation for every day. I read them every 2 or 3 years because I want them fresh in my mind. But there's a lovely one about what to do on December the 24th. Mm-hmm. And every year I posted it on December the 24th. And then I thought along this line, how silly of me. I should post it so that there is time for people to consider what they're going to do in this little ritual on December the 24th. So it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Instead of hurrying around to do it today, I'm going to post it today, and it's basically about putting a tray out on Christmas Eve, which says, legend has it on the night of the Nativity that whosoever ventures out to great snows bearing a succulent bone for a lost and lamenting hound, a wisp of hay for a shivering horse, a warm cloak for a stranded wayfarer, a garland of bright berries for one who has worn chains, a dish of crumbs for all huddled birds who thought their song was dead, and sweetmeats for little children who peer from lonely windows. Whosoever prepares this simply abundant tray shall be proffered and returned gifts of such an astonishment as will rival the hues of the peacock and the harmonies of heaven.
Oh,
and it's lovely. Just beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, but I always rush to do it on Christmas Eve. And actually, and out in the country where I live, very little of it, but the food is ever taken. But the food is often taken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cloak is not taken or the wreath of berries, but it's still lovely to do it. Sometimes I had to put a wreath of tinsel.
What's that book again?
It's called Simple Abundance, A Day Book of Comfort and Joy by Sarah Ban Brennick. It's spelt Breathnack. I'll put it in the link. But it's a beautiful old-fashioned, and I just opened it on February the 5th, and it's summed up, the world is too much with us, William Wordsworth. You know, spending, we lay waste our powers.
Yeah.
And that's William Wordsworth. I still think that for many families, Christmas would be a happier affair if we left it to the men and stop trying to control it, and let the men go out on Christmas Eve to the supermarket half an hour before it closed, getting whatever he can find in the freezer and some beer and some wine and whatever boxes of sweetmeats there are left, and just coming home with it and say, this is what we've got, and it's all going to be a surprise, and let's go for it. Yeah. I think we women would probably be a lot happier if we didn't have to control the whole damn thing.
Wow.
And that's it for today, ladies and gentlemen, gentle folk.
From your chocolate, I think that's really got me thinking there. But, you know, you began with a joke about chocolate advents, but that's superb. I could do some real sort of contemplating on that, because that is it, I think. Delayed gratification is the gift that we need to rediscover.
Yeah. One day there will be peace in the Middle East. We may not live to see it, but one day there will. That is my hope and my confidence. And in the meantime, I will do what I can. And that's the end of it.
Yeah.
And now I have to go and deal with 16 brace of pheasant.
Good for you. Enjoy. Thank you, Maggie. God bless everybody.
Bless you, Mark. It's lovely to talk with you. Thank you.